Hi, I'm Leslie Dolphin. Now, you may not know that there's only one standard gauge heritage railway in Suffolk. It's the Mid-Suffolk Light Railway, or the MIDI as it's known. And it's the focus of the latest podcast from Suffolk Money, supported by Kingsfleet. Hugely popular with visitors, there's already a string of events planned for the coming months. And 2024 could well prove to be a pivotal year, as two major projects draw tantalisingly close to fruition. My colleague Kevin Birch has been along to find out more.
I don't mind admitting I'm a big kid. I love steam trains. I don't know what it is about them, whether it is the steam, the sight of them, the smell of them, the sheer power. I mean, they do say, don't they, that once they're on the move, they're just like a living thing. They're fabulous, so I'm really in my element here. This place is supported by a mini army of about 100 volunteers. We'll meet some of them as we go round, but our first port of call is Ian May, who's chairman of the Trust. He's here, and he gave me a short potted history of the line.
Well, it was a light railway, which came about in order to be able to build railways in late Victorian, early Edwardian times, to access rural areas that were considered deprived and needed the transport systems. So it started with freight in 1904, so they'd built the line as far as it went to Laxfield in 1904. Unfortunately, they ran out of money, and there were various other difficulties, and so it never went to the full extent, which should have gone to Halesworth, across Mid-Suffolk, but it stopped at Laxfield. And then passengers, they put on a passenger service in 1908, and it never made any money, and LNER, when they took it over, were very reluctant to take it over because it was... And here we have an example, an interruption, a shunting by one of our diesel shunters.
Yes, I was going to say, the listeners wouldn't have missed that. There was a little bit of activity going on and some shouting. Just explain to the listeners what's happening here.
Well, they've just pulled a steam tram, a steam Belgium tram, which is one of our locos, out of the storage shed in preparation for steaming it at some... in the next few days, but they're using our resident diesel shunter to get it into position.
That's what I love about this place. There's always something happening.
It is. There's always something happening. Yes, and as you saw when you came in, the number of cars here. We have 40 or 50 volunteers on a Wednesday, and they're involved in all sorts of activities. So in fact, this is a community of people that come together to enjoy taking part in helping run a railway. And the locos just off is just giving the signal. And that's all part of the excitement, and people who may be retired, they've got something that they enjoy coming out to do. So that, I think that's all part of what makes this a special place.
Oh, special, that's a word. So we've got the activity here, and also you are expecting a loco today, so that explains again maybe why there's so many cars here. Tell me about that.
Exactly. Yes, we have our guest loco coming from Pontypool Railway, and it's our guest engine for the year. There has to be reason to come back, as much as people may enjoy it. They want to see something happening. So, for instance, people are asking us, when can we open the line extension, which we have built. We've built 500 metres of new rail, professionally done, seen by the Office of Road and Rail, and passed, ready for use. And that people are asking, when can we see the public using it? And that is, we need a certification, which is called a transport and works order, and that's what we're seeking at the moment in order to be able to run public trains across our new line.
And that extension, I mean, that's incredibly ambitious, isn't it?
It has been, yes, and we've been planning it for 10 years, and hence, you know, we're very keen to get it in use. a lot of effort and a lot of time has been spent in organising that. And when we can achieve that, then we can look at building a platform at the other end, which we propose to call Aspel Holt, because Aspel was the next station down the line.
And how important do you think it is, and what will that give passengers in terms of the run down the line once it's all complete?
They will experience something akin to how it looked at the time, because you're running through a rural area, fields all around, hardly any buildings within sight, and the view from the top is very Suffolk.
You mentioned, of course, you are a charity. How tough is it? Because you have things, let's think of the obvious ones, insurance, all your other bills, equipment, materials. How tough is it for you to financially make this work and keep it working?
Our costs have spiralled. Take coal, for instance, gone up three times in price, 300%. Insurance costs also gone up hugely. But we are keeping our head above water. It does require tight financial controls, but we remain optimistic, and we hope that we can provide a really enjoyable experience for people to come. Because that's what it's about, isn't it? It's, as well as us enjoying what we do, we want the people that visit the railway to enjoy it as well. And so it's making that experience something special. And that's what we try and deliver.
And do you find that when you're asking people to come up with grants, support, that they understand what this is all about? Or does that penny only drop when they come here and feel it and see it and smell it?
I think it's both. We got some great members and other people from the public we perhaps don't know, who make donations. Sometimes they like it linked to a particular appeal, like the line extension, like the restoration of our steam loco 1604, which is almost ready. The boiler is now back in its frames and being fitted out. And we have been helped with grants in the past, and I hope that in the future that we can get some more grant aid, because that is, for the big projects, that's the only way you can do it.
Ian, thank you so much. Fascinating.
Thank you. Thank you, Kevin.
Well, talking to Ian, you get a sense of the overview of this place and what makes it so magical. I'm just going to have a chat with John Reeve, who I've known for some years because I've been here before, John. And the beauty of this place is, to me, it's just magical, isn't it? There's a certain feel about it.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I mean, there are a lot of very enthusiastic people here. I mean, there are people I don't think have got homes to go to.
Well, you're the same, because you always have a huge smile on your face. You're the same today. Just tell me, what is your title and what is your fundamental role here?
I'm the marketing manager, and I started out really just being publicity and advertising and that sort of thing. And suddenly I've been finding that I'm more and more swallowed into admin and stuff that I never knew I would be involved with before. And I also look after the website as well. So it's not just a question of getting bums on carriage seats, it's all the rest of the stuff that makes it work as well.
And what for you is the essence of the MIDI? Is it taking people back in time and recreating a certain part of our history? What for you is the special part of that?
Well, I think the thing that I see most is when families come here, the children are always besotted with the steam engines. I mean, it's like, you know, they've never seen one before and they can't really understand how it works and the noise it makes, and the smell, of course, is wonderful. And they just get so excited about it. And they keep coming back. We've got serial visitors.
Well, that's great, isn't it? Because we were talking earlier, talking to Ian about the funding model. Mm. And for you, you have to keep that going, don't you? And these
Absolutely.
Young people are the way to that.
Yeah, yeah. But more than that, I mean, this year is going to be a very good year for us, we hope. Where's the wood? I'll touch that bit of wood. Because we've got several new things happening. First of all, we've got a new exhibit from one of the United States Army Air Force Base museums. I'll with us for the rest of the season, and they've got a small site here. The other thing that we've done is we've formed an alliance with the Eastern Counties Bus Preservation Group, who are bringing buses from Stowmarket Station to us on selected days for selected events. We've done it once already on New Year's Day. It was fabulously successful. I mean, we had more people on New Year's Day than we've ever had in a single day ever.
Wow.
We had nearly 700 people on New Year's Day, which was fantastic.
Well, it shows the power of that connectivity, doesn't it, between you and other groups.
Yeah, that's right. And it's the first year where we've had it coordinated to a point where, you know, we can actually sell it properly. So it's on the website, it's in the advertising, it's in the PR and all that sort of stuff. And the bus people are very excited about it as well, which is great for them, because it gives them a reason for, you know, exercising their buses.
Well, it gives them a destination, doesn't it? And for you as well, it's great doing all this wonderful activity, but unless you can tell people and spread that, it goes nowhere, does it?
Yeah, that's right. And then, you know, as you were talking to Ian earlier on about the big projects that we've got, getting our own loco up and running, which we hope will be finished by the end of this year. But like everything else, it's always taking longer and costing more. And of course, the extension. I mean, once we got the extension open, I think one of the things that people will really notice and will bring back people that have already been before is that it doubles the experience in time. So you're getting a 10-minute train journey to get to the other end and 10 minutes to come back. So, you know, it's going to be, are we nearly there, Dad? You know, as opposed to, oh, we're already arrived.
Time to get off.
Yes, right.
Well, that would be fantastic. And having been down the line, you do get that sensation that it's wonderful, but it's almost like, I want a bit more of this. And now they'll be able to do that.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And the plan is that they'll go to the end. They won't get off there yet. But they'll have their ride, and then they come back to the Dovebrook station, which is halfway where we stop now, and then they can get off and, you know, have a look around and see whatever is available there.
Yeah.
All that's being looked at right now. We're putting in a new foot crossing and all sorts of things like that, which is making it more user-friendly. I mean, I do quite a lot of presentations to groups, you know, local charities and whatever. The first part is always the history of the line, which was, as you said earlier, almost a disaster. Well, it was a disaster financially. I mean, the poor MP that was really the chairman in the first place was bankrupted by it. And then you've got that break in the middle where nothing happened for years and years and years, and then this group of people from Stowmarket decided to site the museum here because there was still enough to build on. And all there was huge brambles all over the place. And I've got, you know, some of my slides have got pictures of things just looking like forest. And underneath is the platform and, you know, that sort of thing. And you see how much work went into that, because there was, apart from one bit of platform, there was nothing else here. I mean, it's staggering. All of this has been done by volunteers.
And that's often the work. When visitors do come, they don't see that side of it, do they? What's been cleared to make way for this?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. I mean, and all the other things that happen as well. I mean, as we stay here longer and become more established here, people bring things to us. And so when we go into the restoration shed, most of the heavy equipment in there has been donated to us, which is great, you know. So suddenly we've got a range of machinery that will do most of the heavy work that needs to be done on the steam engine that we're allowed to do ourselves with our volunteer force. And all we had to do was find a way of picking it up and bringing it here and saying thank you very much.
Fantastic. I feel the restoration shed is calling us.
Should we
go and have a look?
I think we should.
Okay, John, we've now come inside the shed. For the listeners, just describe what we've got in front of us. It's a beauty.
It's a Hudswell Clark 060 saddle tank, which spent all of its working life with British Sugar. And it was, in fact, I think I'm right in saying, the last working steam locomotive in East Anglia.
Wow.
And it's had a fairly checkered history since then, because nobody seemed to want it after it was finished with. It finally ended up over at the Nene Valley, near Peterborough. And somehow or other, our volunteers managed to get it here. And we've been working on it gradually ever since. But as you can see, what we've got now is an almost complete locomotive, in that all of the framework is ready and running, the brake gear and all that sort of thing. The boiler is just being fitted to make sure that all of the parts actually do work and connect, and we've got all the bits of tubing that we need. And then that has to go back to the boiler specialist to be finalised and given its certificate. But otherwise, all we do is, famous last words, put it together like a 3D jigsaw puzzle, and then we'll have our own loco.
As simple as that. Yeah. Fantastic.
This loco has been in bits for thick end of 15 years, and when the boiler came back, even though it was the boiler that was taken out, what we didn't know was that we'd actually gone too far in repairing the framework, so that the boiler actually had to be lifted up again to take off some bits that had gone on too quickly, if you see what I'm trying to say to you rather badly, because I'm not an engineer. that was frustrating, because we lost about a month on that. You know, suddenly everybody's saying, yeah, we've got it back, it's all going to be, it'll be running by Christmas, and then of course it doesn't fit. Why doesn't it fit? Because we don't have, there's no works manual. We haven't got a kit of parts that says, a book that says, first do this, then do that, then do this. The excitement to get the framework finished went just a bit too far. But now that's done, and as you can see, the boiler is sitting there as it should be.
Well, when we came in here, I very rudely disturbed Chris Rain, who's one of the volunteers here. Chris, what were you doing? Because it looked like a very delicate job.
We're boring it. This is a clack valve for our engine that we're restoring. We need to, and we only have one. So we've had a casting made, and I'm now machining that casting to match the one that we have.
And I imagine that's the story of so many parts. You're basically starting from not a lot.
Yes, this project started a good number of years ago, and a lot of the volunteers that took that apart are no longer with us. And we have to find all the parts and work out how they all go back together again, and those that we haven't got, we have to do our best to make.
That's fantastic. And tell me, what's your background? What, presume you want it in engineering?
Yes, I was a toolmaker before I retired, so this is work that I'm familiar with. I worked in Bury St Edmunds, I think the company no longer exists now, Precision Engineering Products in Bury, did my apprenticeship there.
Wow.
And worked there.
So a lifetime, but that's true of so many engineering firms, isn't it? So many have gone now.
Yes, I think I've worked for two or three engineering companies since then, and they're all pretty much gone. You know, I think when I started my apprenticeship in the 60s, I think engineering was on the decline, and it's been, on the decline ever since, really.
And how long have you been a volunteer here?
I think it's about 8 years now.
Oh, wow, good, yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So quite a lot of time. And yeah. What was it about it? Why did you want to get involved?
I've always enjoyed steam engines. I know very little about them, but I just, as an engineer, I just love the way they work. You know, you can see everything, the rods and the levers, and you can. So I've always been fascinated by steam engines. As a youngster, my father came from the northeast, came from Durham, and once or twice a year we would go to visit my grandparents, and it was on a steam train. And all the big stations, York, all those with all the big engines in and out, that was as much a holiday.
And you've never really lost that fascination?
No, no.
What does it take then? So you're a volunteer here. What does it take? We were talking earlier on, John and I, about everything you do here seems to need a huge amount of patience.
Yes. Yes. I mean, as I say, this project has been going on for a number of years. It's slow, but we make progress as and when we can, either when funds are allowed or time. So, yeah, you have to be patient.
You make progress until someone with a recording device comes along and stops you in the middle of your work. I'd better let you get on. Chris, lovely to talk to you. Thanks for your time.
You're welcome.
We mentioned earlier on, one of the beauties of a place like this, in fact, one of the necessities, is keeping it fresh and coming up with new things. And here in this lovely old wooden shed, we have a new thing. And I'm with Phil and Don. Phil, if you would, just explain to me, what exactly is this? Because this is an exhibition that's here for the year.
It is. The Midi Railway have kindly allowed us to use what was the ticket office to have an exhibition for the forthcoming season. The idea is to try to resurrect the story of the Mendlesham Airfield and its association with the Midi Railway during the war years. I mean, the airfield was not in Mendlesham Parish, it was in Wetheringsett, but apparently it was named Mendlesham because there's another airfield during the war, Wethersfield, and they didn't want to confuse the two. So the airfield was built in Wetheringsett, and during the war years, 1944 through to 45, when the US Army Air Force operated out of here, it was supplied by the Midi Railway.
Oh, that's what I was going to ask you. So that was the connection. It was vital in that regard.
It was vital in that regard. And the station at Brockford, which is almost where we're standing at the moment, was used to drop off supplies. So we have tried to put together as much of the memorabilia as we can, with the hope that that will encourage people who have little bits and pieces from those days to come to us, and maybe in the future this can be expanded into a museum type of display rather than just an exhibition. But we hope to interchange everything we've got here during the year to keep it fresh, and we hope that it helps the railway in telling their story as well.
Brilliant. Phil, thank you very much. Don, let's just have a quick word with you as well. How important for you, Don, is this, having this here for the whole year?
Well, it's very important because the story needs to be retained and told. We're sitting in amongst a wealth of history here, all over this part of the country. You don't have to drive too far afield to find a disused airfield. And the history of 8th Air Force and its participation in World War II is significant. I believe changed it, directed the course of world history. And I'm not sure if folks out there have seen the Masters of the Air production with Tom Hanks and Spielberg produced that. I've just recently finished watching that to tell the story of the 100th Bomb Group up at Thorpe Abbotts. And there's another project with the U.S. Army Air Force Heritage Site being initiated at Bungay, but that's a separate story. I consider myself fortunate to be living here in amongst all this history, especially I'm a retired U.S. Air Force pilot.
I was going to say, the listeners will have noticed that.
You probably figured out I'm not from around these parts. And I had three tours at Lake and Heath, and so Air Force is, I've been an Air Force guy. But when I look at the legacy of the Air Force, it was an Army Air Force at that period. The U.S. Air Force was founded in 1947, right after the war. But the significance of 8th Air Force participation in the war in a war was huge. And when I talk to folks about this, the period of the Battle of Britain, that too directed the course of the war, because had the Luftwaffe succeeded in taking out the RAF, there would have been no 8th Air Force on this island, because right after Battle of Britain, 2 months later, Operation Sea Lion was going to commence. And had the Germans invaded the island, there would have been no 8th Air Force here. And that makes me wonder what would have been the outcome of the war with that. But I find not only Americans who are interested in this, preserving this, it's on the wall right here, family members of the 34th Bomb Group. The local people, when I talk to them, oh yeah, my dad or my granddad or whatever interacted with the U.S. forces that were here, it's as significant to the locals as it is to these people what happened here, okay? And the other thing I find when I interact with the curators around here from the 95th at Horam, the 453rd at Old Buckingham, the 493rd at Debbidge, the 100th up at Thorpe, I've talked to these curators and they say, yes, Don, we're seeing an increased influx of Americans coming here because granddad, who flew here, is now gone and he never told us about it. So these Americans are increasingly coming over to find out what granddad did. And again, that's what we're showing here. Here's my granddad right there, you know, or whatever. So this story is so significant, it needs to be preserved, and that's part of what we're doing.
I was going to ask you, with your background, is your big fear that it will be lost?
For generations, again, if the story's not told, because think about that. For young people, if you can get them away from their cell phone long enough to read about something else, if you will.
I don't know what you're saying.
But the idea is that these people who actually lived here and participated in this, they're leaving us. And if there are stories to be gained, garnered from them, we get it before they go, right? And display that story, tell that story. Again, the one here is the relationship between the railway supporting the 34th Bomb Group during their operations. Again, was significant. If I have opportunity to help preserve and tell that story, I'm all in.
Don, Phil, thank you very much indeed. Fascinating. The lovely thing about here is everyone you meet is very keen to talk about the MIDI, about their passion. I'm with David Clayton. David, you wear quite a few hats, don't you? Just tell me about that.
Yeah, well, I'm quite new, actually, to the railway. I've only been here 4 years. And I blame my wife as well, because she's the train nut. I started 4 years ago, so within 12 months, I became a volunteer coordinator. Must have thought I was doing quite well, because then they asked me to become a trustee and company secretary. And because my background is college lecturer, they asked me to be the education officer. So I wear those hats. So I work closely with, obviously, the board in making the decisions, but also with all of the trustees. One of my roles is to... I'm actually responsible for their welfare as well. So getting to know people and putting people in the right roles and making sure that not overdoing it. Most of us are fairly, shall we say, on the wrong side of 50, but very stubborn. And making people slow down is part of my role sometimes, because we don't want people getting ill
and
injuring themselves.
Yeah. And also, it strikes me, I mean, I've been here several times, but just today, it is a family, isn't it?
Oh, very much so. We do try to build the relationships between people. And although we have separate departments, we try and mesh together so that we don't get in each other's way. Or if someone's got a bigger job, others will volunteer from another department to go and help. If we have a large delivery of sleepers, for example, they're heavy, it takes four of you to move each one. And there's only four people on our permanent way team. So the infrastructure team will drop things and go and help move them. Some of the engineers will come out and help.
Well, that's fantastic. And I have to say, if we had to sit anywhere on a day like this, so we're sitting beside the track, the sun is trying to break through. There's a little bit of warmth there, isn't it?
Yeah,
we can hear the birds singing. I mean, it's the most beautiful location. So throw in the kind of nostalgia and you're on to a winner.
Oh, definitely. I mean, I think this has got to be the best office. It really has. I mean, I'm very much hands-on. I love being involved with the carriages, which is one of my roles as well. I'm semi-responsible for the carriage above the framework, so the wood is my domain. Recently been doing the roof on one of our coaches. To be honest, on Saturday when I was working, we were up there and it was so nice. The sun was shining, we're painting it white. We couldn't actually see it because there was so much sunlight. We could see what we painted and what we hadn't. But I'm not going to complain because it wasn't raining. It's such a nice atmosphere. There's so many friendly faces. And if you aren't feeling your best, someone will normally put their arm around your shoulder, metaphorically or physically sometimes, just to say, you're all right. And that's nice. I mean, going back a couple of years, the COVID thing, we were able to be here because we were outdoors. So we had small gangs working. And I think that helped an awful lot of us, because we've got a lot of people who are on their own. And if they'd had to spend 18 months indoors on their own without seeing another face or without real contact, that's going to be crazy. So this helped, and I'm sure it did.
Yeah. And I suppose the killer question, but with your three hats on, we're at a really exciting time with the line extension, with the new loco, hopefully finishing that. Where do you see the MIDI going into the future? Is it something you can look ahead with confidence?
Yeah, I do. I think we are getting some younger people involved. Recently had a couple of younger members who've completed their Duke of Edinburgh Award here, because I have to do a volunteering stint. And this is better than a charity shop, so I was told. And they get to come down. And one of those has actually stayed on as a member afterwards. The other one, her whole family joined up as a result of her coming down here. So we're bringing new faces in. Steam has a romance to it, I think, that I don't think will ever go away. And as long as you can get that scene by people, they then want to get involved, and that hopefully means the future is there. We might seem a little bit old, but we're quite modern in our outlook on things. We're looking at putting QR codes on notice boards so that there's a little backup video to go with it, or a bit more information, putting on different types of running formats so that it's different. We want people to come back. And to do that, you've got to bring the changes. You can't stand still.
Oh, it's just fantastic, David. I mean, it's so lovely to hear you, all of you, talk with so much passion and also the ambition and confidence in moving forward. So every strength to you. Thank you for your time.
Thank
it's
you.
Been great.
No problem. Thank you very much.
Well, as you will have gathered, these are exciting times for the team here. They hope that by the end of the year, the work on their loco, which is still underway here in the restoration shed behind me, funded by the Heritage Lottery Fund, will be complete. They also hope that by the end of the year, visitors here will be able to travel down the newly extended line to the new endpoint of Aspel Holt. Great ambition, great hopes, fingers crossed.
Kevin Birch reporting on the wonderfully nostalgic Mid-Suffolk Light Railway. And if you'd like to know more about the MIDI, just visit www.mslr.org.uk. That's mslr.org.uk. And you can find out more about what we do on Facebook or by visiting our website at suffolkmoney.co.uk. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast. That ensures you get the very latest edition uploaded straight away to your podcast provider of choice. And if you can give us a 5-star rating as well, that'll help other people to find us too. Big thanks to Kevin and to the rest of the team who work on the podcast, Colin Lowe, Joy Day and Sally Birch. And most importantly, as always, thanks to you for listening. From me, Leslie Dolphin, until the next time, bye.